came back for you, came back to you. By Solro-san. Narrated by Rhea 314. For Lunate 8 in ITPE 2022. Fandom. The King Eternal Monarch. Relationships. Joyong and Igon. Igon and No Ongnam. Igon is apprehended by the royal guard almost as soon as he gets back to the palace. As they restrain him, he suppresses the instinct to order them to get their hands off him, and instead curses at himself for not taking this into consideration. All he'd been thinking about as he ran back was to get to Yong. But, of course, there are still guards on the grounds. And of course they are going to catch him. To them, he's an intruder who runs toward the scene of an attempted coup, carrying the four-tiger sword which is still drenched in blood, as if the blood on his clothes isn't incriminating enough. When they pat him down, they also find his gun, the spare bullets, and the Manpa Sikcho. Gon doesn't resist when they put handcuffs on him, because it'd only make it worse, but he glares at them when they push him down to sit on the ground. One of the guards points his gun at him, while another talks into a walkie-talkie and reports that they have one of the traitors. There are four of them in total. If not for the fact that Irin lays dead by his hand already, Gon would have been upset that they wasted their time on him. Instead, he now tries to assess the situation. But he doesn't have much to go on. Earlier tonight, he had held all the cards, but now he has very few left. All he knows, remembers, has been told, about the rest of this night, is that the royal guard, the police, and the military will lock down Pusan, and later all of the kingdom, in their attempts to find Irim. Right now, as he is surrounded by four highly trained, very visibly stressed guardsmen, that's of no use to him. Other than perhaps knowing that they will spare no expense getting the man who murdered his father. Too little, too late. But he has never blamed the royal guard for what happened in Chunjungo, and he won't start now. The treason was led by people they were sworn to protect, after all. "Get up," barks the guard previously on the walkie-talkie, and grabs a handful of Gon's jacket to haul him to his feet. Gon takes a deep breath through his nose, biting down hard, and manages to get up without telling him off. Still, with a gun pointed at his head, two guards shove him forward, holding a tight grip on his arms. He's not sure where they're taking him, but it's in the opposite direction of the Chunjungo, and subsequently, from Yong. "Was there a..." he starts, but is promptly interrupted by an elbow to the side. Gon groans at the impact. "Shut up," the guard tells him. "Inside the Chunjungo," Gon continues. "Was there..." The guard hits him again. "If you touch me one more..." Gon doubles over when he gets a fist to his solar plexus. He gasps for air as they half-drag, half-lead him the rest of the way. They throw him in a small room that's getting locked from the outside without taking off the handcuffs. There's a bench along one of the walls, or a very narrow bed, a toilet in one corner, and no window. He didn't know they had places like this in the palace. Perhaps they are gone by the time he gets in-depth knowledge of the workings of the palace. Or perhaps there's another reason no one's bothered to show him this part. He sits down on the bench/bed, tipping his head back against the wall with a deep sigh. This isn't ideal, to put it mildly. He's frustrated that he hadn't seen this coming, that he'd been so stupid to think he could just walk back into the palace. But that is nothing compared to the increasing worry of what must have happened to Yong. If he's wounded, if he's dead, the guards must surely have found him by now. And then what? What will they do to him? Gon wants to believe Yong got out on his own. He wants to believe he got away, but he knows some of those bullets hit where they shouldn't have. That's why he hurried back, to help him, to save him like he had saved him. to take him back home. It feels like he sits alone in the holding cell forever. He starts to count after a while to make sure and to occupy himself, distract himself. At least this place is more comfortable than the one at the Chungno police station, but he tries to stop the comparison there. It's much harder than he imagines. When someone finally opens the door, all his adrenaline has disappeared. He's tired and worried and sad. Incredibly sad. It's not yet clear what their actions tonight will lead to, or has already led to. But if this goes according to his theory, he's lost a lot of friends tonight. And Jong-tae-woo, which is too much for him to process at the moment. Two guards step inside before the door is closed, but not locked, behind them. One of the guards positions himself by the door. He's younger, built like a block, and by the way he pins Gon down with his eyes, he's clearly there to intimidate him. It's enervating, but Gon ignores him. He's been pretending to not notice the royal guard his entire life, no matter how they look at him. The other guard carries a folding chair. Gon thinks he recognizes him from his childhood, but he can't put a name to the face, a feeling he's become all too used to lately. The guard arranges his chair so that it's facing Gon, but he doesn't sit down. For a long time he stands there, looking down at him. Gon holds his gaze, waiting, because now he has a plan. Sort of. "You're in custody of the Royal Guard of the Kingdom of Korea," the guard finally says, "for participating in an attempted coup led by Prince Imperial Kum. The murder of His Majesty the King, and the attempted murder of His Imperial Highness the Crown Prince." Hearing the charges is harder than Gon has anticipated, yet there is something extremely comical in being suspected of the attempted murder of himself. Or perhaps he just thinks that because he's tired. "I was at the Chunjungo," he admits, "but I didn't participate in the coup." "You were found on the palace grounds covered in someone else's blood, carrying two items belonging to the royal family." "Yes." "Care to explain that?" "Only to head court lady No." The guard by the door snorts, but Gon keeps his eyes fixed on the guard standing in front of him. "That's not happening," says the guard, taking his seat on the folding chair. "Why did you come to the palace tonight?" "I came to help." "Right." The guard does nothing to hide his skepticism. "That's why you had the sword and the flute, is it? Safekeeping." Gon doesn't reply. "There was another man there," he says instead, sidestepping his plan to get to talk to Lady No for a moment. He can get back to that after he finds out what happened to Yong. 180 centimeters tall, 28 years old, he wore a long black coat. He was protecting his highness. I think he got shot. "Do you have him in custody too? Do you know if he survived?" The guard looks taken aback by the stream of words, blinking once. "If you were at the Chunjungo tonight, you know that protection wasn't very high on the chore list." "Someone killed those men," says Gon, "and it was not the royal guard." Well, perhaps that depends on how one defines it. Gon wonders what their working theory about the bloodbath is. He knows what the official story is going to be, but this early, mere hours after the event, they can't know they need to cover something up. They must still be looking for the actual solution. The guard in front of him narrows his eyes, and the one by the door takes a half step closer. Gon realizes that he might have stepped on some toes he shouldn't have. He'll win nothing by aggravating the men, and decides to fall back. The silence drags on before the guard on the chair asks, "What's your name?"
"Kim So-eul."
"And you say you came here to help?"
"Yes."
"Okay, then perhaps you can help me by telling me where Prince Imperial Kum is."
Yes, but only if you tell me if you found anyone alive in the Chunjung-go.
The words fall out of his mouth before he can stop them. Edim's fate is his last, only bargaining chip, and he hadn't planned on trading it for information about Yong, but there it is. There it is, and he can't even regret it. It's what he came back for, after all. The guard is silent for a long time, watching him, probably wondering if it'll be beneficial for the interrogation to answer or not, or how truthful he should be when he does. Gon holds his breath, hoping that this isn't a ruse, and that they actually still need help finding the traitor. Finally, the guard says,
"His Highness and one of the assailants."
Gon sighs in relief and closes his eyes. When he'd left, there were two people alive. The young him and Yong. The assailant has to be Yong.
"You'll find Edim's body close to checkpoint 8, he says when he opens his eyes again. By the confused look he gets from the guard, he realizes that that system might not be in use yet.
"If you follow the northeastern path in the bamboo grove, you'll find him."
"Are you sure?"
Gon nods.
"Yes, and the man you have apprehended is not an assailant. He saved the crown prince's life."
A raised pair of eyebrows and a short humming are all the reply he gets. The guard clearly doesn't believe him, and while Gon will probably sympathize with that further down the line, it's really frustrating right now.
"Can you let me speak with Head Court Lady No now?" Gon asks.
The guard lets out a joyless laugh.
"Who do you think you are making requests like that?"
"Someone who came here to help."
The guard hesitates.
"At least tell Lady No that Kim Soil wants to talk to her," says Gon. "Then the rest is up to her."
The guard doesn't move a muscle before suddenly standing up and folding the chair with a loud bang. He turns around without giving Gon a second look, taking the other guard with him as he leaves. When the lock is turned, Gon slumps against the wall. He could probably, definitely, have played that better. Hopefully it will still work. Gon has no idea how long they've kept him isolated in the windowless room when the door finally opens again. Going by the stubble on his cheeks and how many meals they've served him, it's probably 4 to 5 days. They have taken off the handcuffs, but he's still changed his opinion about this being better than Chungno Police Station. He'd do just about anything to be back in that holding cell. Now, when he hears the lock turn, he sits up on the bench, and when he sees who it is, he gets quickly to his feet. It's Lady No, 25 years younger than when he last saw her, still with streaks of black in her hair, and dressed in mourning. Gon is acutely aware that he probably reeks, having lived in the same clothes for days, and still not being allowed to properly wash the blood out of his hair. But his entire being screams at him to walk over and hug her. Seeing how she doesn't know him, however, he bows his head instead. A guard comes into the cell to put the handcuffs back on. As much as Gon hates it, he appreciates the concern for Lady No's safety, so he goes along with it. Lady No and the guard exchange a look as he walks out of the room, and she nods once before the guard closes the door. Handcuffs or not, Gon admires her bravery, being alone with a strange, unknown man, even if she, too, probably knows this is a conversation to have in private. He's said shibboleth, as his mother would have said, and now Lady No has come.
"I know you're not who you say you are," says Lady No.
"So,
who are you?"
He takes one last breath, wishing he would look a little bit more like himself than he currently does. He had lost faith that his half-butchered plan had worked, but now here she is. If anyone is to help them, it's her. She is the only one who has a chance to believe him and the only person he trusts.
Igon, he says, and never, not even when he gave his name to Teu, has it felt so monumental to say his own name. Lady No stares at him and holds her gaze. After a long time, Lady No says, "Are you really?" "I know it doesn't look like it right now, but I grew up well thanks to you," he says, smiling. She still doesn't believe him or trust him, and he can't say he blames her. He wishes he'd still had the scar on his neck to show her, but since he doesn't. "I think it was my grandfather who brought you here, because my father talked about you reading to him as a child. I think you came here because there was a war in your country, going by some things you've told me. Kim Soil was a poet in your world, but not in this one, at least not under that name. And you sing some of his poems to me when I miss my mother." "Your Highness," Lady No breathes out. He smiles. "You haven't called me that in over 25 years. "Your Highness," she whispers again. She walks up to him, taking his bound hands. "What are you doing here?" "I'm trying to put things right." "What things?" Gon looks down at their hands, shaking his head. That's a step too far. He can't explain that part to her. He can't tell her what didn't happen this time, and what he thinks he lost because of it. "The man they found inside the Chunjungo," Gon says instead, because he has to know if he's lost him, too. "Is he still alive?" Lady No nods. "He's had extensive surgery. Parliament wants him fit to stand trial, alongside you." A weight is lifted off Gon's shoulders when he hears that Yong not only is alive, there are people actively working on keeping him that way. Not that he approves of their motives, but after all this time not knowing, that's secondary. As is the news of his own pending trial for the murder of his father. "He can't do that," he says. "He's Choyong, Admiral Jo Chanho's son. And he's the one who saved me." She lets go of his hands, taking 2 short steps back. She covers her mouth. "You have to help us get back," he says. "Where?" "I'm not sure, but we can't stay here. There's a place between 1 and 0. "The Sand Dune Bridge," mumbles Lady No, as if she retrieves a memory she hasn't visited in a long time. Gon smiles. "Yes, I've waited out time there before. I hope it still works if we need it." "Your Highness, can you help us?" She bows her head. "I will see to it." Gon raises his restrained hands and puts his arms around her in the most awkward hug, pressing his unshaved cheek against hers. He never doubted that she would help them if he managed to convince her of who he is, but it's a huge relief to know that he has. "I'll need the Mampasikjo," he mumbles, not willing to let go. He'd thought he'd never see her again after saying goodbye in 2020. She raises her arms and puts them around him. "I will see to all of it, Your Highness." 2 days after Lady No's visit, Gon is moved to a room with a window. He gets to shave under supervision and take a much-needed shower. They take away his clothes, and the new ones he gets are bland but perfectly sufficient. Beige trousers and a white shirt. He asks for a notepad and a pen, and for some reason they humor him. He then spends his days with a notepad in his lap, trying to work out the mathematics of what he's caused by going back in time again. And, perhaps most importantly, how he might be able to come back to Teul.
They haven't told him if they found Edim's body in the bamboo grove or not. Going by the way the guards look at him now, though, Gon suspects they have started to put together a very different picture of what he did the night of the coup, one much closer to the truth. Somewhere, outside of this room, he knows a younger version of himself is going through hell. He tries very hard not to think about that. Yet he feels it. There had been many times over the years when he'd thought about abolishing the rules and traditions that come with state mourning, but he never got around to it. If he gets a chance again, he will. When he dies, no one should have to go through that. Lady No doesn't come to see him, but he understands. She has a more important version of him to care for, and he knows she does it well, and as long as Yong isn't fit to travel, there is no rush. Then, one morning, she comes back, still dressed in mourning. She brings with her his old clothes, washed and mended. Between the coat and the trousers lies the Manpashikjo. Cho Yong is transferred here today, she says. He's awake, and they say he's stable. I don't know if he's in any condition to travel yet. I'd like to have both of you somewhere else when the mourning period is over, and they'll start to ask questions about you again. If you can get us off the grounds and into the bamboo forest, I'll deal with the rest. She bows her head. Anything else? Gon hesitates. There is one more thing, but he's still not sure about it, or if it's possible. When she looks up and meets his eyes, he knows he should at least try. Yi Sung-hun, he says, before he can change his mind, died fighting Edim's men. Is that true? No, Gon shakes his head, but let the record say that, for the sake of the man who will raise me as a son. Lady No bows again and leaves without commenting. He wonders if she thinks he killed him too. If she does, it's something he can live with. When he's alone, Gon takes out the Manpashikjo to look at it. He shakes his head, smiling. If he had known what power Lady No has over seemingly every part of court life, he would have feared her more growing up. The next evening, Lady No comes back, this time accompanied by a pale, but very much alive, Cho Yong. He's dressed in a gray suit with ridiculous shoulder pads, his hair is all wrong, and he has his arm in a sling, but he's alive. Yong, Gon whispers as they step into the room. Yong smiles, nodding once. Your Majesty. Lady No makes a quiet, astonished sound when she hears the honorific Yong uses, as if she might not have been entirely convinced before. Yong, says Gon again, putting his arms around him in a very gentle hug to not hurt him. It's so good to see you. Yong places his arm around Gon's back. You too. After a while, when neither of them seem willing to let go, Lady No tuts at them. You don't have time for this, she says. And when they take a step away from each other, she goes on. Your Highness, you need to change. Captain Cho. From inside her hanbo, she retrieves a gun and hands it over to Yong. He takes it, giving Gon a baffled look. Don't look at me, Gon says. I'm just glad I didn't know this side of her when I was sneaking out. Lady No looks suspiciously between them. Both men clear their throats and look in a different direction. When Gon's dressed in the same clothes he'd worn the night of the treason, they leave. They don't meet anyone, but then they don't take the most obvious path down to the palace marina either. When they get there, Lady No presses a key into Gon's hand. It's the boat furthest out, she says. I trust you know the waters. Gon nods. And use the life jackets, both of you. They nod, not daring anything else.
You're not going to be accused for treason for helping us, are you?
Gon asks.
Now you think of that, she mutters, but then she smiles, patting his arm. With or without you, history won't record what really happened that night, Your Highness. You don't have to worry about me. I have powerful allies. From the corner of his eye, Gon can see Yong squirm a little by the fact that she doesn't call him Your Majesty. He remembers that it took her a while to get out of the habit completely, even if she managed the mental switch faster than he did himself. Hearing her call him Your Highness again makes him feel safe for some reason.
Please be healthy. You have to stay healthy.
He pauses and smiles.
I suppose it's my first order.
Lady No bows deeply.
One day, I'll come to you, and you'll know it's me.
There's always been so much of your mother in you, she says. But I'm glad to see you have your father's health. He gives her another hug, hoping that it won't be the last one. Then she waves Yong to her and gives him a hug, too, whispering in his ear. Yong smiles and nods. He even straightens up a little. As they walk out on the pier, Gon asks,
What did she say to you?
Yong gives him a small shake of the head, and Gon doesn't ask any more questions. Instead, he helps him into the boat and unties it before getting in himself. As they back away, something tightens in Gon's chest. This can very well be the last time he sees his home, if his calculations are wrong. Who knows where they'll end up? He turns the boat around and doesn't look back. It has to work. There is no other way. It's been so long, Gon can't keep the time straight, but he's fairly sure this is right. Primarily, he's here to drop Yong off, where he belongs, before starting his quest to find Taeul. But there is one more thing he has to do first. When he reaches Lady No's office, he runs into Myung-sunga, who's just leaving. She looks surprised but relieved to see him as she gives him a short bow before she hurries off. He watches as she disappears around the corner. From the office, he hears a deep sigh, probably because the door is left open, followed by a sharp intake of air.
Your Majesty.
Gon takes a quick step inside and closes the door behind him, as Lady No, with some trouble, gets on her feet to come over to him. Before she gets the chance to say or do anything, he hugs her. It makes the air leave her, a small, frustrated huff.
I'm sorry I had you worried, he says before letting go. I didn't mean to.
He keeps his hands on her shoulder. She shakes her head. He smiles.
I'm going to be nicer. You have my word, he says. And not just because I think you have a gun under there.
It takes a moment, but then a smile spreads over her face.
You came. I said I would.
You've said a lot after that, Your Majesty. She reaches to pat one of the hands resting on her shoulder. But I'm so glad you're back.
So am I.
She takes his hand and leads him back to her table. Sit, she says, pointing at the pillow on the floor. Before you get any ideas of leaving again, you're going to tell me about the world on the other side of the sand dune bridge. Gon smiles and obeys, not just because he thinks she carries a loaded gun. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening, and happy ITPE Lunate 8. I hope you've enjoyed this. Thanks.